This show is a proud member of the Nerdy Legion Podcast Network. Get more at nerdylegion.com. Enjoy the show!
Spoiler alert! What Did You Watch This Week is a candid discussion about recent movies and TV shows, and it may contain spoilers if you haven't watched them yet. Listen at your own risk.
Everyone, and welcome to episode number 66, double six of What Did You Watch This Week? My name is Mike.
And my name is John, and we are only three episodes away from the kinky number episode.
Giggity. So, yeah. So, John.
Yeah.
Did you watch a lot of stuff this week?
Well, it didn't feel like it, but it kind of was. I kind of watched quite a bit. I watched good stuff, I feel. You know, this is summer, and we're kind of in that weird lull spot. I did want to start off, though, with one fun little trivia thing. Before the podcast tonight, we're recording Monday night, I popped in. I got a game from Gamefly, and I just popped in for a few minutes to play it. It was the two-pack of Arkham Asylum and Arkham City. And I popped it in, and the only reason that I'm bringing this up is because I noticed something that could have been added. This is the remastered version called Return to Arkham, or it could be something that I never noticed before. I think it's because it's remastered they redid this, but as I'm watching the opening cutscene, and it's great, you know, Bruce Wayne getting locked up in the prison, they're running all the credits, you know, Rocksteady, Warner Brothers Interactive, and then it says right on the screen, Batman, created by Bob Kane with Bill Finger. And I said, nice. I know that.
So, nice.
So that was kind of cool.
Sweet.
Yeah.
That is pretty awesome. I, myself, did not watch a lot this week.
Mike.
Do
we need to have an intervention here?
I mean, I did watch some stuff, but I didn't watch a lot of stuff.
The podcast is What Did You Watch This Week, not What Didn't You Watch This Week.
True. But, yeah, I just didn't watch a lot.
All right.
So, why don't you kick us off? What did you watch, John?
Well, a couple of real quick ones for the opening part here. Downward Dog was a great episode again this week. Although it's a short season, I couldn't help but notice.
Oh, and it's the only season, too.
Oh, did it get canceled?
Oh, you didn't see that the other day?
No, I didn't.
Oh, yeah. It's been canceled.
Oh, that's too bad. Yeah, because I noticed that this week is a double episode, and the second one said season finale. You know, that's too bad. It's a
Should
really
say
good
series
concept,
finale.
And it was an enjoyable show, but I guess it just wasn't right for TV. But it was a good one. It was about getting older. You know, not old. He's only 7, but you know, in dog years, that's 49. He's getting up there. You know, and he's dealing with a puppy. And you know, conversely, his owner Nan is dealing with being, you know, a middle-aged woman with her middle-aged woman friend at a club for young people. And, you know, they do the traditional, you know, they think that they're mothers or nannies or whatever. So, yep. Fun stuff.
Nice.
And I also watched the two-part season opener of Wrecked on TBS. This is the second season of Wrecked. This is a show that originally I thought it was just like a complete spoof of Lost, but it's not really. Like, it's goofy in some ways, but it's meant to be more like, I don't know. It's not a parody like the Angie Tribecas are. It's more of a funnier riff on a legitimate genre. You know, these people crashed in an airplane on an island and they've been trying to survive, and each one of them has a different personality, of course. And
I think I remember seeing a trailer for that. Yeah,
it's not bad. It's not terrible. It's not goofy. It's got some good stuff. It's got Riz Darby, and of course, I love Riz Darby. Best role ever was the Werehuman. But
oh god, that was amazing.
Yeah, and he's just great. But yeah, it was enjoyable. Two part season premiere. It's back. So there's that.
Cool.
Did you check out Dark Matter this week?
I did not watch Dark Matter this week. No, I did not. Okay. I did not find time. My apologies. You know what I did watch, though?
No, but I bet you're going to tell me. I bet you're going to tell the entire audience. Everyone here is on pins and needles.
I have watched the first two episodes of Blood Drive.
Excellent. Let's talk about
I have watched the first two episodes of Blood Drive. And I would just like to say this. I am shocked with the content matter of the show. Not that I'm offended by it by any means. but just what they're able to get away with, from dropping the F-bomb to having pretty much nudity, but not really nudity, but whatever, on Sci-Fi Channel.
Yeah. To blatant cannibalism.
Oh, yeah, blatant cannibalism in episode two. But, I mean, it's a Sci-Fi Channel original series. It airs on Space and Canada as well, which is basically – I don't know. I feel like if it's on Sci-Fi, it's on Space. If it's on Space, it's on Sci-Fi. I mean, that's where Sci-Fi gets Dark Matter. That's where they got Continuum and everything, you know. But, yeah, I'm legitimately shocked over the level of violence and swearing and gratuity and everything else in this show, and I am in love with it.
Exactly. Thank you.
I absolutely am. I mean, like, sincerely, I can't say enough good about it.
It's like I said, it's terrible, but it is well done terrible. It is not stupid, cheesy, grainy, gritty crap.
No, it's high quality looking awesomeness of Grindhouse. This is Grindhouse.
Yes.
This is definitely, you know, I know it's the production company's called like American Grindhouse or whatever, but oh yeah, it's done well. I mean, you know, the first episode, like you discussed last week, which was the start of the race, we see how they end up becoming partners. We learn about how the vehicles run on blood, which, you know, honestly, you think they'd have some sort of better system of feeding the people into the vehicle with all the blood that splatters out of the vehicle.
Right.
Whatever.
Coats the whole engine compartment.
Exactly, yeah. And this week's episode, you know, they welcome to the Pixie Swallow. Or they go to this town, and it's like a stopover, but he even brings up the point when he says, like, where's all the pomp and circumstance and, you know everything else like they had at the end of the first episode.
Yep.
And they're basically at this diner, and everyone loves this diner, especially the hamburgers. It's because they're cutting up people and feeding it to them.
Yep. Because as the guy tries to stay in the end, you know, he's a legitimate businessman, and it's impossible to raise cattle, and chickens are pretty much extinct.
Yep.
So, you know, he's got to make a living somehow.
Yeah, exactly. And I do love how it takes place in the dystopian future of 1999.
Yes. That adds so much cred to the fact that it looks like an 80s production.
Yeah. And then on the other end of the spectrum, I can't remember his name, but his partner –
yeah,
the one that lost his eye in the first
one. The guy
one.
With the amazingly carved upper body.
Yep.
I love women, but my God, looking at this guy, I'm like, holy crap, what did he do to get in that kind of shape?
We're both talking about the black guy, right?
Yes, we are.
Okay, good. So anyways, he ends up with the heart company. Because that's what we find out, that the people running this race, the guy that is running it, he works for the heart company. The people with the contract that privatized the police is from the heart company. So it's all one big conglomerate owning all this.
Yep.
And his partner's now like in this basement, and they mind-sweeped him or whatever. They erased his memory you know what I mean?
Well, they did that eventually. They said at the end of the episode that they were going to wipe his brain.
Oh, yes, at the end of the episode.
Because he managed to get in touch with his partner at the payphone while his partner beat the crap out of that cannibal with the payphone, which was fun to watch.
Yeah.
But, yeah, he did some exploring, and he discovered that Karma's sister is at an asylum that's owned by the Heart Corporation, and that, you know, that's how they lured her into the blood drive, I guess. And then he was like, yeah, I'll join you and work undercover, hint, hint. And they're like, sure, we're just going to wipe your brain first.
Yeah. That makes sense, right?
Yeah, of course.
Because they asked him, did you contact your partner? And he's like, no. And then they're like, well, actually, we know for a fact that you did. Oh, well, it's not what you think. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
We're going to erase your memory. But, no, it's a great show. It's a great show.
Really,
I love it.
It is. They, you know, it turns out that the reason that there was no party going on at Pixie Swallow was because Mr. Slink, the guy who was in charge of it, was I right about his voice?
Mm-hmm.
Holy crap.
Yes.
Yep. He was called into the corporate offices, and that was one of the, like, least dialogued but funniest whole stretch of scenes in this episode, was watching him trying to, like, get his meeting with the head honcho there. And the woman just kept, like, telling him to go sit down. And then that other guy's like, I'm going to get a job, and I'm going to be working here, and somebody else is getting fired. And he just destroyed him, like, smashed his head
with the briefcase. Well, he assumed
it was him. Yeah. And he annihilated him with the briefcase, and it was beautiful. I loved it.
Yes. The excessive beating of the briefcase to the face was quite quite pleasant.
Yep. Next week's looks
great. Right in the middle of the corporate office like that, you know, and then he's covered in blood, and then the girl comes down. He was going to be the new head of maintenance, but you can come into your meeting now, and they just leave it there.
Yeah, the secretary never even looked at him while he was beating this poor fool to death. Like, she just kept talking on her phone. Yep. Please hold. Please hold. Please hold.
Yeah, it was good stuff.
Yeah, next week's looks like a great one. You know, Steel City, and there are monsters in the dark. It's like, what are those? They're eyes. And when the lights go out, you're going to see more than eyes. Ah, I'm so excited. I friggin' love this show. It's a guilty pleasure show.
It does look very, very good. So, what else did you watch this week, John?
The second to the last episode of this season of iZombie. Same pitch that I'll give again this week that I do every week. iZombie, fun show. You know, the zombies in this world are completely coherent. They can function along with normal human beings, but if they eat a brain, then they take on the memories of that person. They take on the personality of that person, and then they can have little flashes of things that have happened recently in their lives, or maybe memories that are older. Usually it's recent stuff. But that's how she helps to solve crimes. And there's a lot more going on to it than that, because right now, there's an entire compound of zombies. You know, there's many, many people in Seattle that are zombies, and they're trying to live their own life, but also prepare for Z-Day, which is not the day that they're going to rise up and attack, but it is the inevitable day that humans will discover that zombies are real and decide that they want to kill them all. So they're prepping, they've got their own little army, and they're just ready, because they know that when that happens, they're going to be targeted, and they want to be able to fight back. Which is kind of cool. I appreciate that much more than just let's train an army and then go kill humans because humans suck. And they're not out there trying to infect all humans, which they could just by scratching them. They're more like, you know what, live and let live, but we're getting ready to defend ourselves. So this week will be the finale of this season. There's at least one more season coming, so I'm excited.
So I've never watched this show.
Yep.
But do they age? Do they rot and fall apart or anything like that?
They do not. The only thing is if they go too long, the longer they go without eating brains, the more feral they become, although they refer to it as going Romero. Like, going full Romero is when you've regressed to the point where all you can do is a typical zombie thing, and try to attack anything that moves. And once you go full Romero, you can't come back. So you want to try to eat brains before then. But no, so far, a couple of years have passed. They don't really age. Zombieism can be passed on sexually, so that's a concern. You know, you have feelings for somebody else who's human. You can't really do anything about it because you could turn them into a zombie very easily. But they can be shot and cut up and maimed, and their body parts do not grow back, but they can be, like, spackled over and such.
Okay, I was just curious because, like, in a lot of other things we see, like, for instance, like, I'm not watching it currently, I realize, but on The Walking Dead, essentially, you know, they're dealing with the fact that some of the zombies that have been dead for a really, really long time are kind of rotting and falling apart.
Yes. Yes, they are.
And I know it's a different genre of zombie, different class of zombie, but I was just curious.
Yep. Honestly, like I said, you know, this is a really cool show. I've liked it since season one. There have been some cheesy episodes, but it's never reached a point for me where I'm like, oh my God, why am I watching this crap? Like I have with a lot of the other CW shows. It's just, it's been really enjoyable. I wish they could have done some kind of crossover with either Lucifer. It would have been perfect with Lucifer. Or, you know, any of the other DC comics, but as it stands right now, it's still a very enjoyable show. You know, it had Steven Weber on there for a season, and he was a complete douchebag and did it so well. It's got good storylines. It's got good character development. And, yeah, I really like it. If anybody out there is looking for a good binge-worthy show, I'm serious, pick up iZombie. It's a lot of fun.
Nice.
Yeah.
So I watched... I think we only have one show that we both watched to talk about, actually. But anyways, I watched the season finale of Fargo.
Oh, yeah.
And I got to be honest, definitely my least favorite season of this show that they've done.
I had read that from a few different news outlets. I didn't go too deep, but that seemed to be the consensus.
And... really, I mean, like, even a coworker of mine, well, you know Brenda, she also watches it, and even she was just like, yeah, this is her least favorite season.
Now,
essentially, go ahead.
I was going to say, is that to say that it was a terrible season, or just that it was not as enjoyable as the other two?
It just wasn't as, I mean, if you're comparing the three seasons to each other, or individually, or whatever, this would be the one that I enjoyed the absolute least.
Gotcha.
It wasn't bad or anything like that. It's just like it didn't have that special something that the others had. You know what I mean?
Yep. It seemed like it was going to in the beginning.
It really did kind of start out really positive, but it's just the way it ended up. I mean, like, all right, so. Oh, where are we? Sorry. So the star of the show, the cop that we keep saying is a Gloria Burgle or whatever. And this episode opens up with she's putting in her resignation. But then this IRS agent we met earlier in the season is researching Stassi and all the other bad guys. Because essentially what's happened this season is you have this Emmett Stassi owns some car lots and he borrows money from the wrong people. And then those people basically force the way into their business. The guy's name is Goldfarb and he's a British fellow. He forces his way into his business. He makes him Varga. His name is Varga. He makes him do things. He makes him take out loans, like $300 million in loans that he secures through his name, through his company. And then he sells the company off, and now Stussy's stuck with the personal debt, and on and on and on. So basically he comes in, takes over this company, launders all kinds of money or embezzles all kinds of money from it, but it all looks like it's this other guy's fault, and he's stuck with it. And then he leaves him high and dry, and he takes off. And in the interim, if a bunch of people get killed or hurt or if someone gets in his way and he has to kill them for it, then he just – then, yeah, that's fine with him.
Okay.
So Stussy had sent this IRS man person all the documentation to basically – so he can go through it, research it, because what happened was his twin brother took $10,000 out of the bank. He went in dressed as his brother, pretended to be him, who drew $10,000, which will generate, you know what I mean? If you take out more than $9,999, a notice is sent to the IRS about it. That's in real life.
Yes.
So that's what happened. So that's what brought the IRS into it in an earlier episode. And then he kind of got scared away by Varga, because Varga is very good at talking people down or talking down to people more so, I guess. And just intimidating and bullying them with his words. He's a smooth talker. Anyhow, so Now this IRS agent is back. He contacts Gloria because Stussy left her card in there. And essentially, it comes down to Stussy signs the company over begrudgingly. He tries to escape, but they beat him up and then leave him kind of unconscious in his house. Varga then ends up he's being blackmailed by Nikki, who was Ray's girlfriend from earlier. You know, she and Mr. Wrench have been tied together.
Right.
Anyway, so Nikki basically and Mr. Wrench basically blackmail Varga because she wants him dead. And they set him up so that when they go to this warehouse to do this money drop and she's going to give him over the hard drive information, they're basically there to kill them. And he gets away, but they end up killing all his men. And they get the money. And she gives the money to Mr. Wrench, says, "This is yours. I'm going to go find Stussy because I'm going to kill him." And she takes off after him looking for him. And while she's driving there, she sees him pulled off on the side of the road. So she pulls in behind him. She gets her shotgun. She's going to kill him. A police officer shows up. And, yeah. State Trooper and Nikki had kind of get up and quickly shoot each other once, and she kills the cop. The cop kills her, and then Stussy gets away. And I was very pissed off that they killed Nikki because I don't know. I kind of liked her as a character, and I kind of want to see her get her revenge, but she doesn't because Emmett gets away. Emmett Stussy gets away, and he goes back to his wife's house. And what we see is he breaks down into her and cries and begs her for forgiveness. And she's cool with it. And then they go 5 years later.
What?
Yeah.
Yeah. Don't
so
do
it's
that.
So it's like, oh, 5 years later, and it's like Thanksgiving or something. And they're all at the house together, and Emmett's there with his wife and his kids, and then his business partner, Jason Priestley's character, who had been poisoned by Varga but didn't die. He was just in a coma for a long time. He's awake now, apparently, and he's alive, and everyone's good and happy and this and that. And I'm just like, this is stupid. Like, it just annoyed me. You know what I mean? Because Nikki doesn't get a revenge at all.
So, wait. So it's 5 years later, and we just get to see that they lived happily ever after. I was expecting you to say, like, they're all sitting eating a meal.
Oh, no. It's not done. Don't worry.
Okay, good. I'm waiting for the good part here because otherwise I'd be mad.
No, that's not coming.
Okay.
But like basically it's like 5 years has gone by. Nikki's dead. She doesn't get her revenge. Emmett essentially for the last 5 years lives a very happy, pleasant life. And Varga got away is what we know. And Emmett goes to the refrigerator to get some sort of dessert they forgot to the table. And then we see Mr. Wrench standing behind him and he shoots him in the head. And it's like, all right, so Emmett got killed by Mr. Wrench, so he did it for her, essentially. But it took him 5 years to do it, and she still doesn't know, so that's unsatisfying. Hmm. Now we fast forward to Gloria, who looks completely different as a person. She works for Homeland Security now. She's, you know, she was the sheriff and then the deputy, whatever.
Right.
She works for Homeland Security. Her hair's different. She looks different, this and that. And she's walking down this hallway, and she's like, "You got him? Yeah. His passport said Daniel Rand." And they were like, okay.
What?
And, yeah. Yeah. That's what his passport said.
Okay.
And, but he's in a holding cell. She's like, all right, I'm going to go check him out. So she goes in and sits down, and it's Varga. And they basically have a conversation where she basically says, "Do you know who this person is? Do you know who this person is? Da, 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 da." Varga does one of his normal speeches of why I'm better than you, why this isn't going to work, why you're not going to arrest me, and how talking to you is a waste of my time, a waste of our breath. And she's like, yeah, well, in 5 minutes, she says, well, in a few minutes, three agents are going to come in here, and you're going to be placed under arrest and charged for money laundering and 6 counts of conspiracy to commit murder. And Varga asserts, no, in 5 minutes, your supervisor is going to come in and tell me that I'm free to go and there's nothing you can do about it. And then they just sit there and stare at each other. And then you see Gloria and they keep showing the clock and the clock's counting down the minutes. And then they fucking fade to black.
Really?
Roll credits.
Yep. Come on.
Yeah. The season was very unsatisfying.
Wow.
Very unsatisfying. The you know, the it just, yeah, it wasn't as good. definitely wasn't as good. Season 1 has been the best so far. Season 2 was very good in its own way. Season 3 had some good moments, but for the most part, wasn't a good season. I doubt I'd ever rewatch it other than the first episode to watch Nikki, who's played by, was it Mary Stuart Masterson? Is that her name?
Mary Elizabeth Winstead.
Sorry. Mary Elizabeth Winstead, to see her step up out of the tub and see her naked butt. Otherwise, I don't think I'd have any reason to want to watch it.
And you can always just look that one up online. I mean, I'm sure somebody's capped that somewhere.
Yeah, I could. I mean, Ewan McGregor was great playing the twin brothers because he played two different type characters, which was that was cool. Good for him, you know.
Yeah.
They both got killed in the show, so that's funny.
Right.
But, yeah, the guy that played the guy that played Varga, David Thewlis.
Okay.
Thewlis. I know if you saw him, you would recognize him because he was just in something else recently. I can't remember if it was a TV show or a movie. Oh, he was in Wonder Woman. He was Ares in Wonder Woman.
Oh, yeah. You mean Lupin. Sorry, yeah. You didn't watch the Harry Potter movies. He was Professor Lupin in the Harry Potter movies.
Yeah, no, I didn't watch Harry Potter, but yeah, he was Ares in Wonder Woman. Like I just saw him in something recently. I can't remember now, but yeah, he was Ares in Wonder Woman.
Nice.
So, but anyhow, it was depressing the way it ended. I was annoyed.
Doubt. Yeah. Well, I thought for a second there, I was like trying to wrap my brain around it because you said that his passport said Daniel Rand, and I'm like, are they really pulling an Iron Fist crossover out of this?
No, but isn't that is kind of funny that they did it that way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Danny Rand. I'm like, oh, wait a minute. Is this going to be it? Nope. Apparently not. It's just going to be terrible.
It was terrible. It really was terrible.
Gross.
Yeah. What else did you watch?
Well, I wanted to touch real quickly. I know you didn't watch Dark Matter this week, but and we'll probably get into it next week when you watch it. But I got to say, this week's episode did something really right. It was a time loop episode, you know, one of those like Mystery Spot or Groundhog Day or whatever.
I love time loops. My favorite one, I think, is the Mystery Spot.
Yes.
Followed by the Stargate SG-1 time loop episode. Yeah,
absolutely. Well, here's what they did right. From the moment you start, it's been going on for a long time. So we didn't see the origin of the time loop. We didn't see the first day that he woke up. Like, 3 is the only one that's having it. So, of course, it would be the curmudgeon, you know, the asshole. And he, like, walks out, and he's just like, no, check behind your dresser. And she's like, what? And he's like, I didn't take your holster. Check behind your dresser. How did you know that? And he's like, I've lived this day many, many times already. It's been, like, so many times. So they kick you right into the action. Because we've all seen time loop episodes. We all know how they work. We don't need to see the origin story again. So I was really happy about that. So we got to actually dig into the middle part, which is what we all like. You know, the meat and potatoes of the time loop. So, yeah, and it was really well done because it wasn't just a simple thing. Again, I'm not going to divulge everything, but it was not just a simple thing. It was really complex, and they had to, like, come up with a very elaborate plan, which was really cool. So, yeah, it was a good episode.
That's cool. I look forward to watching that.
Yeah. It was good stuff. The only other two things that I watched for TV this week, I watched a couple of trailers, I got some news, and I watched a movie again, was the one show that we always talk about together.
Yep.
And then I watched Glow.
I've watched all 10 episodes of Glow.
As did I.
Okay.
Because I didn't realize that they were half an hour long.
Yes, they're like 30 minutes, yes.
Yeah, so I was like, oh, this will be easy. So I popped in a game, and I popped that on the background and blew through it in an afternoon.
Yeah, I watched all 10. Oh, good, because I wanted to talk about that, and I figured I'd be talking about that alone.
Nope, you will not.
So
go right ahead.
I'll open up.
Yeah.
For those who don't know, Glow.
Those who don't know Glow.
For those who don't know, in the mid-80s, there was a syndicated women's professional wrestling program founded by David McLean called The Gorgeous Ladies of Wrestling, or GLOW. And GLOW's still around today. If you go online, they had a GLOW cruise again this year. Like the wrestlers, they have a themed cruise with the girl wrestlers from GLOW for fans that want to go. And I don't think they have matches, but there's just, you know, kind of a, like a convention on a cruise ship type of thing.
Okay.
But anyways, so yeah, I mean, the original GLOW wrestling show went on for, I think it was 4 or 5 seasons from like 1986 to 1990. And essentially this TV series, GLOW TV series on Netflix, is based on that. It's based on how that kind of got off the ground, how they found the wrestlers. You know, they literally did a casting call for women who, and then trained them to be wrestlers. And the person that actually trained them was Chavo Guerrero Sr., which I think at the end of episode 6, there's a dedicated to Chavo Guerrero.
Yes. Yep, yes. I remember seeing
that. Yeah, and that's – he actually trained the girls in the original GLOW series. And as another kind of thing, GLOW didn't have a championship belt initially. It had a crown.
Ah, so that part was accurate.
Yeah, it was. And a lot of the characters on the TV show, like for instance Machu Picchu.
Yep.
Her look, style, outfit, attire was a woman on the show, on the original series, went by Mount Fuji.
Okay.
So, and like, there was no Zoya Destroyer, there was no Liberty Bell, there was no Junk Chain, but they were based on actual GLOW wrestlers. There was a Russian, communist Russian girl. There was the all-American girl. There was the gangbanger chick. There was, you know what I mean? Like, a lot of the characters, they had different names on this show here, but they were based on the actual wrestlers from GLOW, you know? So that was kind of neat. If you watch all 10 episodes, you'll notice, if you're a wrestling fan, that there are several professional wrestlers that made cameos in the show. Like John Morrison was the first episode. He was Salty Jack Johnson. Sorry, Salty the Sack Johnson. He was their trainer in like the first episode.
Gotcha.
Brodus Clay and Carlito were Machu Picchu's brothers. Okay. The ones that helped him train in the backyard and everything.
Yep.
When they went to when Liberty Bell there, when Debbie and Machu and Melrose, they all went to the wrestling matches that night. Alex Riley played Mr. Monopoly. Sorry, Alex Riley played Steel Horse, and Joey Ryan was Mr. Monopoly. They're the ones that wrestled each other.
Okay.
Two other wrestlers on the show that wrestled early that evening were Frankie Kazarian and Christopher Daniels. They had like that opening match when they first got there, which incidentally, I just saw both of them wrestling this past Friday night at Ring of Honor's Best in the World pay-per-view. And Brooke Hogan, Hulk Hogan's daughter, was the nightclub manager that was showing them the place, the venue they tried to rent and then they couldn't get.
Ah,
the one that was actually.
I thought she looked a little familiar.
Yeah, that was Brooke Hogan in there. So, yeah, I mean, like it's there's a lot of cool things like that as being a wrestling fan, like I am, to see kind of like, oh, I know that person. And you know, I can't recommend this enough, and I'm pretty sure you can watch it free online on YouTube right now, and I think it might even be on Netflix again still. There is a documentary called GLOW, The Story of the Gorgeous Ladies of Wrestling that came out in 2012. And if you watch that documentary, even either before or after watching this GLOW TV series, you'll see lots of, oh, okay, all right, I see the nod there, I see how they went with this here, I see how they went with this here. So, yeah, I mean, it's they did a really good job on this, I think, as far as kind of telling the story of what really happened with this in dramatic license, obviously.
I was thinking that was part of it, that, you know, they obviously changed a few things. I am not that big of a wrestling fan as you are.
Yeah.
So I did not pick up on all that. The one thing that I noticed for this show, and maybe this is just me being an outsider, I thought that the focus of these 10 episodes was much more on the character development and the drama than the wrestling.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
yeah.
The wrestling was minimal. Compared
yes.
to everything else going on in there. And not that that was a bad thing. I don't know your thoughts because, you know, you were kind of going into this for the wrestling as well as the story. But I know that for me, I still enjoyed the show. I didn't say, you know, well, this is supposed to be a wrestling show, so where's all the wrestling?
This is the third television series I can think of that's based on wrestling. Fictional series that's not, you know, the first was a show, a Canadian show in the mid to late 80s called Learning the Ropes. And then the second was Nikki with Nikki Cox. Remember that? That went two seasons. Her and her husband Dwight. Anyways, and all those folk had wrestling as a focus, but it wasn't the primary focus either. And this one, actually, the wrestling I thought was treated kind of the best, especially for that mid 80s time frame where, you know, it did show them training. It did show them learning the moves. It did show, like, a lot of little winks and nods, like they're talking to each other or they're checking on each other or, like, are you ready to go? And as a wrestling fan, I can say a lot of that's exaggerated because you don't put someone in a you don't stand on the second rope and look back and the girl nods like, I'm ready. Like, that doesn't happen. Or you don't get into the suplex position and go, like, you ready for this? I'm ready for this because, like – it would be clear that they're talking to each other because they're just kind of standing there.
Right.
You know what I mean? So things like that, I was like, whatever.
Some of it I thought they did well. Like, you know, when the ref would get down in the corner and he'd be like, hey.
Yes,
and he'd be like, honey, I'm so excited for you. You know, we're going to go out. Yes. We're going to celebrate. Now get up. Get out of the corner.
Yes, like the one where the referee came in and he's giving her crap, but he's saying, like, this is excellent. You guys are doing a great job.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Like, I have no idea what's happening next. Do you? Yes. Okay, then go for it.
Yeah, I thought all that was great. I was really into that, actually. But, I mean, yeah, it's a good – I thought the show over the 10 episodes told a great story. I thought it built characters that you'd want to see. And this obviously is catering to not just wrestling fan. It wants to cater to drama fans who, hey, this is, you know, this has a wrestling premise surrounding it.
Yep.
And I thought Mark Maron was awesome on this show.
Yeah. Yep.
As Sam Sylvia, he was fantastic. I mean, you wanted to love him, you wanted to hate him, you wanted to love him again. I mean, like, he did a great job, and I loved how he talked to the girls. I loved how he talked to people. I think one of my favorite lines was, I wouldn't have tried to fuck you if I would have known you were my daughter.
Yeah.
And then, like, the mom walks in, and she's like, how do you want your coffee? but no, I thought Mark Maron was pretty awesome in this.
Yes. You know, another group of people that I think this show would appeal to are women, honestly.
Oh, yeah.
Because there was a strong feminist vibe to this. And, it, there were times, too, when they'd get knocked down because when they were trying to come up with their gimmicks, you know, and they were like, oh, this is where we're going to be. And the guys are like, no, you're going to be welfare queen. You know, because you're a big black woman and that's what people are going to see. And I'm telling you, it may be a stereotype, but, you know, that's just how it is. You know, you're going to be fortune cookie. She's like,
yes.
I'm Cambodian. And they're like, nope, doesn't matter. You know, and you're going to be what was she? The Tehran bomber or something?
The Beirut.
Beirut bomber.
Yeah. And, no, she was just her name ended up being just Beirut.
Like, oh, OK.
The word Beirut. But two words or whatever. Your first and a last name, if you will.
Yep.
But yeah, he did say initially, yeah, Beirut the Mad Bomber, yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, they basically squashed all of them and said, you know, this is how it's going to be. But, you know, these women formed a bond and they formed a sisterhood and they looked out for each other and they took care of each other. And, you know, they really embodied teamwork because they knew that it wouldn't succeed unless they all worked together, you know?
Yeah.
Even though they had the drama going on backstage, and even with Debbie there and her little bitch session there where she kept going through people and being like, no, I need a better heel. No, I need a better heel, but it can't be her. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's the drama.
Yeah. Even that aside, though, I mean, they all had their own crap going on, and they all had their own lives, and you know, you didn't want to love any one of them, but you also kind of loved them all as a whole.
Yeah, no, absolutely. The only person on the show that I was aware of who was on the cast that was actually a wrestler was Kia Stevens, a.k.a. Awesome Kong, who played the Welfare Queen.
Oh?
Yeah, she's an actual wrestler. I mean, she's been wrestling. She's been wrestling for years. On the independent scene, she lived in the dojos in Japan over there with women's wrestling. She was in TNA. She was in WWE as Karma. Hasn't really been seen the last couple of years. Kind of been on the she had a got pregnant, had a miscarriage, kind of took some time off, was getting back into it, and then she made it on this show. But yeah, she was the only one that was actually a wrestler that I was aware of that was in the cast.
Gotcha.
Of the girls, yeah. I wanted to add that in there because I forgot earlier.
Since we're throwing out trivia facts here, I don't obviously have any wrestling ones, but Alison Brie had done a interview before this came out. She'd done a number of interviews and red carpet events and stuff like that. She's really been promoting the hell out of this. And yep. She did one interview, and they were talking about it, and she got very candid. And she said, I think that my fans are going to be very disappointed when they see me in this movie or in this show. And they were like, well, what do you mean by that? She goes, well, I'm finally showing my breasts for the first time, but I think people are going to be disappointed because I had to do so much work to get down to the body size that I was going to be in this show that I lost a lot of weight and my boobs got smaller. And she's not entirely wrong.
Yeah, you know? I remember at different times seeing her on the show just being like, God, she is so skinny and small. And
she almost looked sickly at times, didn't she?
Yes, she did. Like, she really, really did.
Like, I was talking to a female friend of mine, and she said that, you know, it's probably that she lost too much weight too fast.
Yeah.
And it doesn't look like she replaced much of it with muscle. I mean, she had a little bit of tone to her, but she definitely was not like a fit person in this. She looked
not at all.
She looked like a skinny, almost sickly 80s woman, you know, with that poofy hair. And
which I don't see why. I don't know if she did that because she's the starving actress or some shit, or
I don't know.
Because I thought, you know, her and her body size that she had on Community, I didn't think that was an issue.
No.
Like, yeah.
I think she was probably trying to get a little bit more in shape so that she could do some of the more athletic things.
Yeah.
But it doesn't look like she really got, like, muscular. Like, Betty Gilpin, who played Debbie, if you look at her in the other roles that she's played, like Nurse Jackie and stuff like that, she looks pretty much the same as she does here. Like, I didn't see a big change here. But Alison Brie, like, there were times when legitimately I'd look up at the screen and I'd think that I was looking at Kristen Wiig rather than Alison Brie.
Like,
it was just disturbing.
Yeah, I didn't realize – like, I just remember watching the show and being like, man, she's really lost a lot of weight, kind of looks bad, but whatever.
Mm-hmm.
She still looks good, but now hearing that, it's just kind of like, it's kind of depressing a little bit, but okay. One of the things that I didn't care for – no, sorry. Let me rephrase that. One of the things on the show that I did care for was because this was set in 1980s, they were just going with basic, like, 1980s wrestling program stuff. Like,
yep.
Like, you're going to wrestle this person and here's your story. It was all basic storylines. Like, that's like, oh, well, communism, that's all that matters. You're a communist, you're American, boom, that's it.
Yep, exactly.
You know, I liked how they did, like, all the basic storytelling with all the basic style of the matches or whatever, you know. I mean, I enjoyed that. I enjoyed the part where I'm spoiler, cover your ears for 30 seconds, but where at the end, after Debbie's won the crown, and then he sends Welfare Queen in to beat her for the crown.
And it took like one hit.
Exactly. And then, like, Debbie's pissed off. She's like, what the fuck? And she's all grumpy. She comes out to say to Sam, Mark Maron's character, the director, is like, what did you do that for? What? You say now that I just got to – now I have to go after her and to earn my title shot back and chase her for the title, basically, is what she says. He's like, yeah. I'm like, yeah, that's how wrestling works. When you have a heel champ, it's always more entertaining, and you make more money when you have a heel champion and the babyface is chasing them for the belt, because once they finally win the belt, you get that big pop, you get that big payoff, and the fans love it. So, yeah. I don't know if they're going to do a second season, but I feel the way they ended it, it's okay.
Yep.
If they don't. You know what I mean? Like, they could definitely do another season if they wanted to, but if this is the only season we get, then they ended it in a good way.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I think that they could do a second season, but you're right. Like, basically, this show was the setup to explain what happened. You know, it was almost like a mockumentary. Not really. Like not a documentary, but kind of a telling of the story, and now they can move on. But yeah, I could see a second season.
I mean, I enjoyed, like, they took their time. I mean, for 30-minute episodes is what they were, basically, for these 10 episodes. They did a really good job with character development.
Yes, I agree. Not all of them. You know, some of them were a little bit less than others. You know, like Fortune Cookie. We didn't get a lot on her. We got little bits here and there.
Yeah.
But, you know, there were definitely some characters that they focused more on.
Yep.
Debbie and Ruth and
Cherry.
Yep, Cherry.
Sheila.
I just want to call her Britannica, but, you know.
Right. Sheila, Carmen there, Machu Picchu, Sheila She-Wolf.
Yep.
Yeah, there was definitely some they focused on more than others. But even, like, the two girls there, Stacy, Ethel, the old ladies, Ethel and Edna Rosenblatt or whatever, even them, I mean, like, we didn't get a whole lot of them, but we still got them.
Yes. And,
you know,
they were great when they came out as the KKK.
Like, oh my gosh.
We didn't get much of them, but we got them as the KKK members.
And that was crazy.
And I know it was horribly inconsiderate, but my God, the black girls really won over the crowd on that one because they came out and kicked the KKK's ass.
Yeah.
And then we got them as the prank callers, you know, sitting in the hotel room and the stupid prank calls. I like the fact that a lot of the drama that we got out of the ring, you know, that was going on with all the characters and stuff, if you look at it, all of that was reflected in, or it could be reflected in wrestling storylines. You know, the long lost child, the feuding best friends, you know, who used to be best friends and then something tore them apart. You know, usually it's the two guys who a woman tore them apart. Now it's the opposite, two women who a guy tore them apart. These are all wrestling tropes, you know, for storylines between the wrestlers, and they were being acted out in these people's quote unquote real lives, which is kind of a neat way to do it.
No, another thing is, like, you had the girl that played Vicky the Viking, who, in quote-unquote real life, she was an Olympic gold medalist, but she had no personality, and so they gave her real-life story to, you know, Debbie and made her Liberty Bell.
Right.
And this is who you're going to be. And she's like, but these are my actual gold medals. Yeah, but you got no personality. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
That happens.
And then she got mad.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, she did, and she beat the crap out of Debbie for a little while during their tryout when Debbie was like, nope, that heel's not going to work. I do want to add this, that I was just talking about the beat-down biddies there, the old ladies.
Yep.
Those were actually they're based on a team of real glow wrestlers called the Housewives, who had the same gimmick, same personas, same everything. So I just thought it was funny.
Nice.
Anyhow, I mean, I don't know if we want to give away every little thing from every little episode, but I mean, there was some great comedy in there. I loved the music that they had in the opening credits, how it varied.
Dude.
The soundtrack for this whole thing pretty much was awesome.
Thank you. This was one of the best soundtracks that I've heard on a show in a while.
Yeah.
I mean, it was 80s hair rock. Like, they even had Dare by Stan Bush.
That was awesome.
Oh, I mean, wrestling training montage.
It was done to a training montage.
Oh, God. It was everything right there. Like, I was glued to the TV. I'm like, this is fucking great. And, of course, I'm, like, quoting Transformers the movie as I'm listening to the song play. Oh,
same here, yeah. But, yeah, the soundtrack on this show, from the opening credits, the closing credits, because they use different songs sometimes.
Yep.
And then the opening, like, the opening graphics with the glow logo and everything I thought was cool. I love the fact that they had a birthday party at a roller rink.
Yes.
An old school quad skate roller rink. I'm like, that's Happy Wheels. I remember going to Happy Wheels.
And tell me, when you saw that, you didn't think, God, I wonder if there's one of those around here somewhere.
There is the Rollerdrome in Auburn, and there's one down in Portland, because I'm already thinking, like, I got to take my kids there this summer.
No doubt.
I got to take my kids to the roller rink so they can at least experience going to a roller rink once.
God, I haven't been to a roller rink in
20-something years for me, at
probably
least.
Probably 30 for me.
I mean, I remember when we went to Libby Tozier, which was the school I went through to eighth grade.
Yeah.
I think eighth grade was the last year I went to the roller rink. So I was like 93, so 25 years ago. And it was just an eighth grade class trip to the roller rink. Not eighth grade class trip. We used to do phys ed field trips. We'd go to Lucky Strike Lanes in Gardner for candlepin bowling, and we'd go to Happy Wheels in Augusta to go roller skating. Phys ed field trips. No one else had phys ed field trips that I'm aware of.
I've never heard of a phys ed field trip.
We had phys ed field trips. We went bowling, and we went to the roller rink. But when I started at Augusta Police in 2001 – Happy Wheels was still open in Augusta, and I remember on Friday and Saturday nights, like in 2002-ish, might even been early 2003, they would pay to detail to have a police officer there because it was getting so rowdy with the teenagers and whatnot there and whatnot and everything. So
those teenagers and whatnot
shakes fist. Anyways. But yeah, there was just so much awesomeness about this. Like, there really was.
It was a great show. It was, yeah. It was definitely not what I expected. I expected that it was going to be like wrestling all the time.
No.
But it was much more about character development and building up these people. It was not, like, I still believe that as far as like half hour Netflix shows go, Santa Clarita Diet is top of my list every time. But this one was a very good show. I really enjoyed it.
Yes, I wasn't sure how long they were going to do, but I thought like the 27 minutes, 20 minutes, 30 minutes, I thought that was a perfect length.
See, I booted it on one day. Like I said, it was like Saturday or Sunday. And I was like, all right, I'll put this on, you know, kind of put it on the background. I was like, let me see. Oh, there's 10 episodes. Well, that won't take too long. You know, I can do a couple here, a couple there. And then I'm watching it and, you know, playing my game. And then all of a sudden I hear the end theme music and I'm like, what? And I hit pause and I'm like, 27 minutes? Christ, I'm going to be done this afternoon. And I was.
I think the finale was 35 minutes.
Whoa.
Yeah. I watched the first episode Friday morning when I got home from work before going to bed because I had to watch it.
Yep.
And because I heard you saw Allison Breeze and boobies. And so I was like, well, I got to watch that before I go to bed.
Right.
And so I watched the first episode.
And then did you go, aw, like I did?
Yeah. So then I watched the first episode, and then I went to wrestling that night, the Ring of Honor pay-per-view in Lowell. And then Saturday, after I went to bed, I started watching it. So I watched episodes 2 through 8 Saturday night, and then I watched 9 and 10 Sunday night.
Wow.
Yeah. So, yeah, the show dropped on Friday. And I mean, it's 5 hours, basically, of your life is that show. And it's 5 hours well spent.
Yeah. Yeah, it doesn't have to be all at once like it was with me, but you know, it was definitely enjoyable. I had a good time. I liked the themes. I liked the characters. It was a very dirty show because it took place in the 80s, and I mean, everybody was smoking and doing massive amounts of drugs. And
oh, God. And crack, especially crack. Dude, no.
The hairstyles.
Oh, yeah.
And the clothes and the makeup. I mean, these were not attractive people. Like, there's not much about – you see these people all the time nowadays who are like, oh, we're having an 80s party. And I just want to say why. This was not an attractive time of life. This was a very unattractive time.
I don't know. I still like the fact they had VHS tapes and that they had the old console TVs and the VCRs. Like, mm-hmm. I'm like, where'd they get all these awesome little old VCRs?
Yep.
And
the robot. I love the
robot. Oh, God, the robot, yeah. And all the girls wearing high-waisted pants.
Yep.
You know, just – and then
Britannica's walking around with an encyclopedia, and I'm like, why is she – oh, wait, it's the 80s. That was still a thing.
Yeah, exactly.
There was no Wikipedia.
Oh, after because you're British? No, after the encyclopedia because I'm really smart. Nice. Good stuff.
Yep.
Good stuff. Did you watch any other shows?
I did not.
Did you watch any movies?
I won't get into much detail, but I watched Wonder Woman again. And I got to say, it holds up the second time. It was just as good, if not better, the second time. Because I went with two people who had never seen it.
Oh, nice.
And they both were – like, I was afraid I had oversold it because, you know, you and I talked about it on the podcast. And one of the people was like, I listened to the podcast. It makes me want to see it that much more. You know, and I had been telling both of them, it's so fucking amazing. It's so good. It's one of the best movies I've seen in a while, blah, blah, blah. But I was afraid that I was falling into that whole overselling thing. You know, that's happened with you. It's happened with me. You know, we oversell things to each other, and then you go and watch it, and you're like, ah, it's just not as good as they made it out to be, or, you know, it just, it can't live up to the hype. But nope, in this case, both of them walked out of there saying, that is one of the best movies I've ever seen. So I felt good about that.
Nice.
What about you?
Well, Johnny and I, he came over last Tuesday. We watched Blood Drive. And
did he like it?
He loved it. Yeah, he loved it. He thought it was pretty fantastic. He's like, I'm going to be watching this, that's for sure. And then he's like, here, I brought a movie with me. We should watch it. And I was like, all right, what's it called? He goes, it's called Videodrome. I'm like, I've never heard of it. Yeah.
No.
And he goes, yeah, it's a David Cronenberg movie. I'm like, all right, let's check it out. So it came out in 1983. And when the opening credits, it's about an hour and a half. When the opening credits are rolling, I'm going like, this is clearly an 80s movie. Because like, when did it come out? He's like, oh, I don't know. Because I'd never seen it before. Stars James Wood, Debbie Harry. Yes, Debbie Harry from Blondie. And I'm trying to think of a way to describe what this movie is, and I'm having trouble without reading the entire description on Wikipedia.
How about you say James Wood's junk?
So the IMDb description says a sleazy cable TV programmer begins to see his life and the future of media spin out of control in a very unusual fashion when he acquires a new kind of programming for his station. That's kind of accurate, but doesn't really explain just how screwed up this movie gets. This person here, someone wrote this, some guy from the UK writes, Max Wren runs a TV channel, and when looking for new material to show, he discovers Videodrome. His girlfriend, Nikki Brand, goes to audition for the show, and Matt gets drawn into the underlying plot that uses the show as its front for global conspiracy. That's a little bit more, I guess.
Okay.
Essentially, this is what it is. James Woods owns a UHF channel in Canada, Channel 83. He's got a buddy of his. This is back in the 80s when, like, all right, you could grab a signal out of the sky with a satellite dish, and if you knew what you were doing, you could unscramble the signal and basically pirate the stuff. And this guy, James Wood, he had someone working for him who would do this and pull these shows out and descramble them and from other countries or whatever it was, and he would get the stuff to air on his UHF channel. And one of the things he pulls is basically like it's a video of this room and these people in the room, and it basically it looks like a snuff film. But he thinks it's fake, that it's all like, you know, actors and actresses and everything. And something happens to people who start watching it. That's not positive. James Wood's girlfriend, played by Blondie there, Debbie Harry, she is sadomasochist, I can't think of the word.
Sadomasochist?
Yeah, there we go. She likes rough sex and likes burning herself and likes – yeah. So that's like right up her alley, and so she wants to go find the show and audition for it, quote fingers. But yeah, it's really kind of screwed up. And then like the first half, it's like a psychological thriller, and then at some point you're like, oh no, wait. I'm watching like a – like a sci-fi odd type movie. Like, this is not a psychological thriller. I mean, I guess it is, and now there's a big sci-fi element to it and some really kind of cheesy 80s special effects and some pretty cool practical effects, actually. Like, well, they did a good job on that. It's a bunch of schlock.
Okay.
I enjoyed it, though. Like, I enjoyed it for what it was. It was not a five-star masterpiece by any means, but I enjoyed it for what it was.
No, it was not.
Based on your reaction, like, you have seen this, but it sounds like it's been a while.
It's been quite a while, and I remember my experience with it not being an overly positive one. It was not terrible, but I remember thinking, why did I watch this?
Yeah. Oh, here's a good description of it. It follows the CEO of a small UHF television station who stumbles upon a broadcast signal featuring extreme violence and torture. The layers of deception and mind control conspiracy unfold as he uncovers the signal source, loses touch with reality in a series of increasingly bizarre and violent organic hallucinations. The film has been described as being techno-surrealist. So, yeah, that's actually a pretty good description of it.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't know. I wouldn't run out and watch it again by any means, but, yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
Good that you wouldn't go watch it again.
I would not run out and watch it again, but, I don't know. Wasn't too bad. Wasn't the worst thing I've ever seen.
Okay. No, there have been much worse.
Oh, yeah.
Much worse.
Well, I mean, David Cronenberg, it's not like he's bad or anything, you know? I mean, he did Scanners.
He
did The Dead Zone.
Taste.
He did The Fly. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
He's done some good stuff.
His movies are talk-worthy. Like, they're the type of thing that you can definitely talk about afterwards. Not always good, not always bad, but there's something to talk about there.
I would agree with that. I mean, he did do A History of Violence as well. Sorry, that was the one that in Eastern Promises, you know, with Viggo Mortensen. I mean, yeah, so.
Yeah.
So before we talk about Doctor Who,
yep,
I want to touch real briefly on a trailer that I watched.
Okay.
It's called The Foreigner.
Okay.
It stars Jackie Chan and Pierce Brosnan. And it is a English language action thriller flick based upon a novel called The Chinaman. And basically what it is Jackie Chan owns a restaurant. And he goes on a mission of revenge after his daughter is killed in a bombing by Irish terrorists.
Okay.
And the trailer looks very, very, very badass and awesome.
Okay.
And it's Jackie Chan doing what Jackie Chan can do, kicking a lot of ass, doing a lot of fighting. And it just looks really, really good to me. And when you consider the fact that Jackie Chan is 63 years old, it's even that more impressive.
Right.
I mean, he's still done some movies lately, but he hasn't had a leading role like this with as much action and everything in a long time. So it comes out this October. So if it's in a theater near me, I'm definitely going to go watch it because I'm a big Jackie Chan fan. And, it's directed by the guy that did Casino Royale.
Oh, okay. That's kind of
cool. Yeah. So, I mean, you know, it's a guy that, you know, can direct action, I guess. So.
Oh, I wanted to step back for just a second.
Stepping back.
In Glow, Alison Brie playing Ruth.
Yes.
Did you find that there were a number of times, especially when she was like trying to come up with her characters, as it were, you know, oh, this is what my character will be. This is what. Did you find that she was like, it was reminding you a lot of when she played Annie Edison in Community?
Yes.
Like
yes.
Really, really much so.
Yes, especially some of her elaborate stories.
Yes. Yeah, they were almost as ridiculous and over the top as Annie's would be. And I'm not saying that's a bad thing, but it was definitely a – what am I trying to say here? Like it was like a that's Annie again. You know, that's –
Yes. Yes. But she wasn't as whiny in this.
Correct.
You know, she had some. She hurt her friend in a very bad way, and was trying to spend. Oh, she was bending over backwards to try to make up for it, or stay out of her way, or whatever. And I mean, I get it. I get why that. You know, she was doing it the way she. You know, she was being the way she was being with that. So, but
yep.
I don't know. So. Doctor Who time, or do you have anything else to talk about?
I've got some news items, and actually, I watched a couple trailers.
What'd you watch?
Well, I watched Pitch Perfect 3.
I saw that trailer was out, and I thought, huh.
I enjoyed the first two movies, the first one especially, the second one, well, it wasn't as good as the first one, but I liked it. This one just looks like they're cashing in. Like, I can't really get behind this one. I will probably see it when it comes out on video, but I'm not going to the theater to see it. And I'm watching this trailer and thinking, holy crap, they're just doing the exact same thing again. You know, they're not doing anything original. It's the same story again. So I'm not getting behind this one. I'm sorry. I can't.
That's fine with me.
Yeah, that's all I really had to say. But then I saw another trailer.
Yeah.
That kind of took me by surprise. Somebody pointed it out to me. It was called American Assassin.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And I thought I talked about this trailer a few weeks ago.
Maybe you did, but I had not checked it out until just now. And the thing that shocked me about it was Michael Keaton.
Yes.
As a badass.
Big time.
Like, he's been a badass before, but this was like Michael Keaton as an assassin, badass, mercenary, black ops kind of guy. Like, motherfucker, this guy's great.
I might have talked about this to Rude then, I think. I vividly remember talking about this. This movie. But yeah, it looks pretty damn awesome.
Yeah, I'm quite impressed. I can't wait to check this out.
Yeah, that comes out this fall as well sometime, September, October, something like that. So I remember that much of it.
So should I go over the news items now, or do you want to do Doctor Who and then news? Do you have any news stuff?
I'm debating on spoiling Transformers The Last Night.
You know what spoiled Transformers The Last Night was Michael Bay making it.
Then screw it. I'm going to say it. I read this today, and I'm like, are you freaking serious? Did you know that Earth is Unicron in this fucking cinematic universe?
Really?
Yep. That's the big reveal. Earth is Unicron.
Wow.
And they basically, the post-credit scenes apparently for this movie set up another movie.
Yeah. Fuck me.
Yeah.
I can't get over this because I talked to some people are like, oh, I kind of want to see it. Some people are like, yeah, I definitely want to see it. It's a popcorn movie. The last movie legitimately made me angry. Like, everything about that movie made me angry. And I want nothing to do with the entire series. And so, no, I will not be seeing this. I will not see it when it comes out on home video. I will not see it.
So you're not going to watch the Bumblebee movie that comes out next year? The movie that's based on just Bumblebee?
Are they going to let him talk?
Probably not. It's set in 1985, apparently.
Oh, wait. I don't care. No, I won't be seeing it at all because Michael Bay eats dick.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, he's as bad as Zack Snyder to me.
Yeah.
You're saying that Age of Extinction is what turns you off to the franchise? It took that long?
Well, no, that's the thing. Is the first movie I kind of liked. You know, it was the first one in the series. We got Optimus Prime's voice again on the big screen. I was kind of excited about that.
I think it's the nostalgia feeling of it all that made you like it.
Yes. Yes. Because the more I looked back on it, the more I was like, that really wasn't a great movie. The second movie was trash.
It's terrible.
The third movie was friggin' a dumpster fire. The fourth movie, though, legitimately made me angry. Like, it really pissed me off to watch that movie and watch the schlock that they poured forth. The product placement, the ridiculousness, the friggin' two-dimensional characters that had no friggin' anything to them. The whole movie was complete fucking garbage. Like, it was right up there with Batman vs. Superman. Go ahead, hate me. But it was right up there with Batman vs. Superman.
Well, who knows? Maybe the Bumblebee movie would be like Wonder Woman. No.
If I thought that was even remotely true.
I don't know. This is what I do know. I have not been a fan of the series at all. I have watched them because it's Transformers. And like you said, we got Optimus Prime's voice. You know, we got to see Megatron. We got to see Galvatron. But we didn't get to see Megatron. But you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Yeah. But then I saw the last night. My thought was like, well, when it comes out on home video, I guess I'll watch it when it comes out on home video, I guess, just because why not? Yeah. But now I just don't think I'm going to at all.
Yeah.
Yeah. Allegedly, this will be the last time that Michael Bay's going to direct one of the movies. Someone else is going to be doing it going forward. But
I don't believe it.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. We'll see. But when I read today that Earth, it's you know, Unicron is Earth. I was just like, yeah,
yeah,
of course,
that's ridiculous,
stupid. What's your news items? Are they Doctor Who orientated news items?
No,
Okay, go ahead. What's your news items?
So, as we've all read by now, I'm sure, but I'm still going to bring it up here anyway, for those late to the party, Phil Lord and Chris Miller left the Han Solo movie over creative differences.
Yeah, I saw that.
That was pretty shocking. What was even more shocking was how quickly, I mean, I don't even think that the dust had settled on their contract, and they were like, oh, but Ron Howard is going to take over.
What do you think about that?
I think he was waiting right there. I think that the company wanted him in for some reason, and so they kind of pushed Lord Miller out, which is garbage. I mean, Lord Miller do a good job. Ron Howard, yeah, he's an Academy Award winning director, but look at the movies that he makes. You know, these are dramas.
How is he going to get Tom Hanks into the film?
I know. That's what I'm thinking, too. You know, is he going to be like Han Solo's dad?
Hey, why not? That would work, probably. I don't know how I feel about it. I've never watched the Ron Howard movie and been like, wow, this is garbage. But at the same time, I can't think of something he's done that's – I mean, I know he did Apollo 13, people, but that's not – just because it's in space doesn't mean it's the same.
No.
But I can't think of what he's done that would be equivalent, but I guess a drama is a drama. I don't know. We'll just have to wait and see.
When you think Han Solo, do you think drama or do you think action-adventure?
Oh, no. When I think Han Solo, I think action-adventure. I think
smuggling, swashbuckling. I mean
– yes. He's a space pirate.
Yeah.
He's a space pirate, basically, so, is what it comes down to, yes.
It makes me kind of angry.
Yep.
To think that Ron Howard is going to do this, but I guess we'll see. Maybe he's ready to branch out and do something better, perhaps.
Maybe this is what he's been waiting for. Who knows?
Speaking of weird stuff, Damon Lindelof, we all know Damon Lindelof, has been tapped to do a Watchmen TV series for HBO.
Really?
And all they would say about it is that it will be a TV series, not a movie, and it will be a reimagining of the story. So it is not going to follow the comics exactly. I don't know if that means that it's going to take place in that world, if it'll take place after the first one. They said a reimagining of the story, so that tells me that they're going to take an iconic classic and do it the way that they want to, which I don't think will go over very well with fans. Who knows?
Yeah, that could be good and bad, yeah.
Yeah. I still maintain that the only reason that the movie turned out well was because Snyder literally went pain for pain from the comic to the movie, except for the places where he improvised, which turned out like crap. Like the sex scene between Night Owl and Malin Ackerman. I can't even think right now.
I know who you're talking about.
Silk Spectre.
I can't think of her name. Yeah, Silk Spectre, yeah.
But anyway, so I don't know. I'm hesitant. I'd like to see more of what's coming. Since it's HBO and it's not like when Tales from the Crypt was coming to TNT, I think that there will actually be something produced from this. But I'll be interested to see what exactly he's going to be doing with it. I like Damon Lindelof. He's done some good stuff, but... Now, another story. Did you hear that Netflix has just released its first interactive TV shows?
No. What is that all about?
They're children's shows, so you may want to line the kids up, but I guess they're doing things like Puss in Boots and a couple other things like that, where the shows are essentially choose-your-own-adventures.
Really?
Yeah. I have not checked them out yet, but they're really excited about it, and they say that it's kind of going to be the future of their programming, or one of the futures of their programming. So right now it's just kid stuff, but they're planning on doing it for adults later on, too. But you watch the show, I guess, and you come to a certain point, and it's like, do you think he should do this or this? And then depending on your choice, that's where it picks up.
Oh. Puss in Boots, trapped in an epic tale. After tumbling into a magic storybook, Puss in Boots must fight, dance, and romance his way through wild adventures as he searches for an escape.
I bet your kids would like that.
It says it's geared toward ages 3 and 4, so probably.
Wesley, I know there's been
– I mean, I guess technically I do. I have watched – quote fingers more movies this week because they just added a bunch of stuff to Netflix, and like I have probably heard, at the very least, listened to Trolls now 17 million times.
Oh, I know I say this a lot, and I'm going to say it again, and I'll probably say it many, many more times in my life.
Yet another reason I'm glad I don't have kids.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I know. Today alone, on the day trip that we took, we drove only about 220 miles, and I listened to it twice. When I say listen to it, it's because it is on my wife's tablet, because you can download it on Netflix for free. So it's on my wife's tablet, and our son sits behind me, and it's Velcroed to my headrest, and I can hear it.
Nice.
Yep.
So my last two things before we get to Doctor Who, you'll have to let us know if you check out those Netflix shows and how they turn out. Because I'm interested in the science behind it, not so much to do it myself, but you know, I'd like to know what the science is like behind it. So if you do run through those with your kids or whatever, let us know.
Yeah, I will.
So there was a big debate raging over the last week and a half about the place of Sony's products in Marvel's universe. You know, the peanut butter and the chocolate and the peanut butter kind of thing. Because we've got the Spider-Man movie coming up here very shortly. Like, yep. Really shortly.
Sorry. Just to jump in real quick.
Sure.
Did you see how they've retconned the Spider-Man to say he was in Iron Man 2?
Yes. Yes,
I saw that. How do you feel about that?
I don't like it. I don't like them trying to force stuff like that in there, especially considering that back then, this was not even a blip on anybody's radar. So yep. Don't try to say, oh, well, that thing that we made, you know, X number of years ago, that was Peter Parker. Yeah, it really was. No, it wasn't. Don't say that. Yeah. He was not credited in the movie as Peter Parker. So don't say that.
Yep.
Sorry.
Yeah, I agree with you. No. I agree with you 100%.
So the big debate was that, you know, we've got Spider-Man coming up. He's part of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. We saw him in Civil War. He's going to be in Infinity War Part 1 at least. And Kevin Feige has actually gone on the record as saying that at least the first movie after they get done with the Infinity War Part 2, which they're calling Avengers 4, will be Spider-Man Homecoming 2. And he said it won't really be Homecoming 2, but that's the only thing they can call it right now. So, but then the head of Marvel, Sony Studios said that they're making a Venom movie and it's called Black and Silver, and it's Black Cat and Silver Sable movie.
Yes.
And that she was like, oh yeah, they'll be part of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And Kevin Feige, as we were talking about, you know, he had that memed face because he was like, whoa, huh? But finally both of them got together, talked it out, and then they've issued one statement that says no. And this is where it gets really weird. Okay, so they said that Spider-Man is part of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Venom, Black Cat, Silver Sable, and any of the other ones that come out of those movies are not. They are in, like, an alternate world. So they specifically said in this that Venom and Spider-Man are not part of the same universe. Venom doesn't exist without Spider-Man.
The symbiote has to merge with Spider-Man to get, yeah.
Yeah, and no matter which one of the stories you look through, you know, Venom exists because of Spider-Man in one way or another. So to say that, well, we're going to have Spider-Man over here, but we'll have Venom have his own movie, why? Why would he exist? There's no reason for him to exist.
Yeah, pretty much no, none whatsoever.
It'd be like saying there's going to be a Batman movie, and then there'll be a Joker movie, but Joker exists in a different universe. They'll never cross paths. And it's not even that bad either, because, like, Venom is created because of Spider-Man. Like, he doesn't exist without Spider-Man. This is ridiculous. And then they even went a step further and said, oh, and we've decided that one of the main villains of the Venom movie will be Carnage. So you're just throwing the symbiotes in there for no reason whatsoever. I am a huge Spider-Man fan. I love Venom. I liked Carnage. I know Carnage was controversial for a lot of people. I liked what he brought to the table. But this is ridiculous. They're just throwing shit at a wall and seeing what sticks. And I'm not.
Yeah, that is ridiculous.
Yeah, I'm a little upset about that. But, you know, at least they clarified. So going forward, we know that Sony's universe is not the same as Marvel's universe. And they asked Kevin Feige, you know, is it possible that down the road, like, Venom could be part of it? And he says, you never know. And they were like, oh, okay, cool. And he goes, but listen to me when I say this. He says, this is my generic answer. He goes, because you could ask me, will Superman ever show up in the Marvel Cinematic Universe? And I'll say, well, we'll never know. He says, I'm going to answer that for everything from now on. So, yeah.
Well, I mean, I guess that's a good answer, but...
Yeah. The only other thing that I have is one really fun trivia thing, and I think okay. you'll appreciate this.
Okay.
So, in an interview recently with the actor who played Chief in Wonder Woman, he told everybody that Chief was actually a demigod. He was Nappy, the Blackfoot demigod. And he went on to talk about that and about how he fits into the pantheon of gods and demigods and such stuff. They brought up the fact that, like, and second time watching the movie, I noticed this too. Everybody that meets Diana wants to shake her hand. They all put their hands out to shake her hand, and she just looks down at them like, what? What is this? Like, not confused, but just like, I don't know what you're doing. And she just moves on with her life. He is the only one that when he puts his hand out and she reciprocates, like she shakes hands with him. And when he first addresses her, he speaks in Blackfoot and she replies in Blackfoot and they never subtitle it. And he says that what he was actually saying was introducing himself as Nappy, demigod of the Blackfoot, because he recognized in her, her godhood.
Okay, I do remember them speaking foreign language at each other and it wasn't subtitled. Yep. I do remember that part. Because I thought, okay, they're just showing us that she can speak his language.
Right.
You know what I mean? Because yep. she can speak 100 languages. And guess what? She can speak Native American as well, a race she's of people she's never met, quote yep. unquote.
That's what I thought as well.
Huh.
But yeah, that was why they didn't subtitle it, was because they were actually saying, you know, he was introducing himself as a demigod. And she just rolled with it. She's like, yep, cool.
Well, she was there to hunt Ares, so to her that just seemed normal probably.
Yep.
That's pretty interesting. I like it.
Yeah, I did too.
I like it a lot.
So that's it. That's all I got other than the Doctor.
Well, I think we need to talk about the Doctor then.
I think we really need to talk about it. Never has an episode more lived up to the title of Doctor Who than having Missy walk out and keep yes. calling herself Doctor Who.
Yeah. Why are you saying that? Why are you saying that that's his name? Because he always says, I'm the Doctor. And they always say, who? And he goes, the Doctor. And besides, that's his real name. What? No, it isn't. And then he pretty much confirms that, yeah, that's my real name.
Yep.
My real name is Doctor Who. I was like, oh my God, that's so awesome. Like, after 300 episodes and 50 years or whatever it is, you know, he's saying he's Doctor Who. I like it.
I did as well.
So, that being said, yes. pretty powerful episode. Like, I didn't see yeah. it going the direction it went. I kind of, like, I mean, obviously we're going to talk about it because we're going to have to spoil it. So, like, going through the episode, I didn't see how the ending was going to go until, you know, Bill said something about, well, they're all in pain, constant pain. And he said, oh, don't worry, we have this. It goes around your head. It helps with the pain. I went, oh, shit, really?
Yeah.
Like, I'm like, that's no. And then, yeah. So, I mean, craziness. You're way better explaining it than I am, so go.
So, last week's episode ended with the Doctor, and this was something weird, too, and maybe I just picked up on it, because my DVR always records the last minute of the episode before, so I got the last scene with him and Missy in the TARDIS talking about maybe it's time for us to be friends again. And he was saying, you know, that's yes. the problem with hope. It can be addictive. He was wearing a wedding ring. I don't okay. remember seeing him wear a wedding ring. I mean, I know we had the whole River Song thing and that, you know, this kind of came about because her last wishes were sent through Nardole, etc. But he was wearing a wedding ring on his left hand, big silver ring. Mm. And maybe I've just missed it all this season. I'll have to go back and check, which I will be doing shortly here. But it just seemed really out of place. I was like, well, wait a minute. But So basically, we start off this episode with Missy. They land on this ship, and Missy bursts forth and introduces herself as Doctor Who. And these are my, what did she say? These are my companions, expendable and comic relief.
My expendables.
Yes.
My expendables.
Yeah. One of them was comic relief and one of them was something else.
Yeah.
And, essentially what's happening is the Doctor is on the TARDIS and he's monitoring because he's testing her to see if she can be good. You know,
yes.
Giving her a distress call. We find out later through a beautiful bit of, flashback that was done very well that he talked to Bill about setting up this test for her because he really, he misses his friend. He says, this is the only person who is like me. You know, the only one in the entire universe who is so much like me. And that doesn't just mean race. That means, you know, they think alike. This is why they've always been great adversaries, because they are two sides of the same coin. You know, they're both brilliant. They're both way too good for their own good. And the Master just chooses to see the negative of things for the most part, and the Doctor chooses to see the positive. And he says, you know, this is my best friend. This is the person that's most like me in the universe. I want her to be good. And they throw in some nice little nods there when he says, you know, I remember back then he was great. And she's like, wait a minute, he? And he's like, yeah, I think he was a man back then. Maybe it was a woman. I don't know. And he says that Time Lords have lived for all these generations, all these eons. They've kind of moved beyond the simple binary gender system that humans have here on Earth. And so that was kind of cool and a nod to the whole, you know, regenerating into a woman thing.
Right.
But basically, Bill, it's hard to sell her on this because she's like, and this was the other thing too. Like, Bill has had very few interactions anywhere near Missy. Like,
right.
Missy's been locked in a vault. So it's all based on stories that either Nardole or the Doctor have told her, I would say.
Yeah, right.
But she's basically like, she's evil, she kills people, don't let her out, you shouldn't be doing this. And the Doctor's like, no, we gotta test her. And so they agree. And the reason that that flashback happens is because back on the ship, you know, Missy goes out there and she's like, I'm going to save this ship and I'm going to blah, blah, blah. And they're trying to figure out what's going on with it. You know, there's alarms going off because it's right next to a black hole. And they kind of pull an Interstellar here, and, you know, the ship is moving away from the black hole, but very, 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 very slowly. And this one crew member shows up where they are. You know, he comes down, and he's like, what are you doing here? Which one of you is human? Because suddenly there are all these life signs coming up the lifts. And he's like, they only come up when they sense humans, and whoever the human is, they're coming for you, and the only way to stop them is to kill you. And they're like, no, 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 no. You know, we can't do this. This is a real test for Missy. You know, is she going to actually turn in Bill or kill Bill? Kill Bill. And the Doctor doesn't seem to trust her because he comes right off the TARDIS, and he's like, no, 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 we're not doing this. And just before the lift gets up there, and the life forms appear, the guy shoots Bill right in the chest. And I mean,
and that really surprised me because a lot of times, you know, the Doctor will start talking to the person, talk them out of it.
Yeah.
And they seem to be doing it like typically. And then, nope.
No, I mean, blew a gaping, this was not like a little laser blast. This was a gaping hole. You could fit your entire forearm, maybe even your upper arm through this. And we get a nice slow motion of her realizing what's going on and then keeling over. And that's when we get the flashback to tell you why they were on this mission, why they came here. And then when we come back to the present, the doors open and these shrouded bag over their head, like pillowcase over their head, characters kind of come out and scoop Bill up on a gurney and take her away. And they say that they can fix her. And the Doctor's like, good, they can fix her. And they're like, no, only she can come. And the Doctor whispers, like he's standing outside the lift as the doors close, and he's whispering, wait for me, wait for me. And they're like, what are you doing? He's like, I'm sending her a message in her subconscious.
Yep. They're like, well, she's dead. Well, they said they're going to repair her.
Yep.
And so, we see that throughout the episode.
Yeah, it keeps coming back to her because, like I was saying, they do the Interstellar thing where they talk about how the closer you are to a black hole, time passes more slowly. So you get to see Bill does get, quote-unquote, repaired. She's got a giant metal box sticking out of her chest. and a sheet over it so that they don't have to show you, you know, that it's sticking out of her flesh, because then they'd have to show naked flesh. And this is the BBC. But she is talking to this guy down there. It was like Mr. Slash or something. God, I can't even remember his name.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, like Mr. Slash, I think. And he seems to be like part janitor, part maintenance guy down in this ship.
But he knows everything.
Yes, yes. He knows everything about what's going on down there. There's that overweight Nurse Ratchet type who is tending to the other patients that we meet.
God, she is a Nurse Ratchet type, isn't
yeah.
she?
Yeah. We see that there are all these other patients who, like, have the sacks over their heads. Their bodies are completely covered. And they have – it's like an IV – and they have these little teletype machines where they can hit it, and if you turn up the volume, you can hear what they're saying. And it's a lot of things like pain, 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 or kill me, kill me.
Yeah.
They all seem to be very miserable, but they can't do anything about it. They just kind of sit there like they're in a drunken haze and tap on their little buttons. So Bill explores a little bit with Mr. Slash, and he talks to her about things that are going on. He's watching what's going on with the doctor and Missy and Nardole up at the command post that they left them at. And they never give an exact time, but years are passing for Bill and Slash and the other people.
It's almost like they had, at one point, they showed a clock.
Yep.
And the clock showed time at the top of the ship, time, you know, level 1056.
That's right.
And I want to say the top of the ship showed like 2 days or something like
yep.
that. And the level was like on like 1,000 years or something like that.
I think it was also in days, but it was like 10,000 days or something.
Okay, yeah. I mean, it was
insane.
Yeah. Well, so, yeah. I don't even think. I think it was more than 10,000 days. It might have been like 100,000 days. That would be 30 years.
Yeah. Yep.
Or something like that. But yeah, it was or 100 years. I mean, it was. It was a lot of days. Time was passing. Like, when you watch the clock, the second hand was just tick, 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 tick. And then on the other one, it was – I can't even do the tick slow enough. But anyways, it was
– he made mention a couple of times, like, they were talking about how he raised – they were watching the doctor, and she goes, oh, he's raising his eyebrow. You know, that means that he's thinking of something clever. And Slash is like, he's been raising it for 2 weeks.
Yes.
And even Nurse Ratchet was like, you know, hey, keep an eye on him. He goes, are you kidding me? He's been raising his eyebrow for 2 weeks. I'm definitely glued to this. So, and then when, you know, so we'd see him on the monitor and it would be like paused. And then it would flash back up there and some great camera work of suddenly like time's catching up. And they're like, okay, so blah, blah, blah. And the doctor's being very clever and doing his thing. But what's really the interesting story is down in the bowels of the ship.
Yes.
And this is a colony ship, but the blue guy told them that there were no colonists on board. It wasn't ready for people yet, but there are people there. And this is where it gets kind of weird, because Slash is talking about how the atmosphere in here is not good, and they want to go up above deck and take over the ship from their captors, you know, from the people that are running the place. But they know that they can't do it as they are right now, because they're too weak from being inside here, and they're too weak from this atmosphere, so they have to evolve. And they know that it'll take generations, but they've now got a secret tech that can help them evolve even faster. And that's like the heart in her chest, you know, being replaced by the metal box. And that's, like you said, he showed her the thing that goes over the top of your head that would take away your emotions so that you didn't worry about that kind of stuff.
The other little nod that I saw earlier had been, oh, they have a helmet now. Look at that. And I'm like, that helmet kind of looks...
Yeah, he was like all jealous. He's like, oh, I want a helmet like that. But basically, you're getting the hints dropped. And like somebody said earlier, it's too bad that everything was spoiled weeks ago and they told you what was coming. But if you could just...
Oh, okay. So here's the thing. I didn't know what was coming.
Okay. So you must have had a lot of enjoyment.
I don't read any of the news. Like, I don't read any of the I avoid it all on Facebook. I don't watch the next time on Doctor Who. The first time I have all season long was after this episode. So
because you have to see the next one.
Yes, that's the first time all season long that I've watched the next time on Doctor Who. I shut it off. I don't watch it. I don't read any of the news about what happened in this episode or what it means or this or that or what's coming up or Doctor. Oh, they just gave a nod and a wink to this. I avoid all of it.
Nice.
All of it. The only time, like, I think one time I didn't shut it off fast enough and I saw that, like, the Master, you know, the male actor playing the Master or something like that was going to be on it coming up, an episode coming up, or I saw a picture on Facebook or something. Otherwise, I avoid it. So when they did the big reveal at the end, when I saw the headpiece, I was like, no. Mm-hmm. And then I'm like thinking about the helmet. I'm like, get out. No.
Yep.
And then they opened the door and I was like, get the fuck out of here. Like, I couldn't believe it. Like, this explained, like, Bill's the first Cyberman.
Pretty much, yeah. Like, Bill, literally the first.
Bill is literally the very first Cyberman to come off the line.
Yep. Because these,
and that is huge.
These are the Mondasian Cybermen from Mondas. Because Missy's sitting there and she's like, why do I know this? Why do I know this? This seems so familiar. And the planet that these settlers, colonists, whatever, this ship embarked from was Mondas, which the Mondasian Cybermen, I did a little research, they were in exactly one episode back in 1965, I believe, when the show first came out. The first time they were ever shown was like this, which is basically people in, I mean, sweatshirts, sweatpants, gloves, sacks over their heads, the cheesiest looking Cybermen you can ever see. But back for the 60s, that was high tech.
Yep.
And then the next time they were seen, they were much more refined, well, for the
time.
They
were robots. They're now like the Tin Man type of thing.
But,
and which is what we see in the previews for next week.
Yes. Yeah, we see
which
the
is
much
the
more
Doctor
updated.
Falls.
Yeah. So yeah, Bill essentially learns that she is set to evolve like the rest of them. And they make it sound noble, not like, you know, oh, we're selling you on this, but you actually feel for these people. You know, they're oppressed. They're living down here in squalid conditions. They want to get up and take over the ship so that they can, you know, fight back. And so they're evolving themselves, but they're evolving themselves as Cybermen. And, you know, if this is the very first Cyberman, if Bill is the very first Cyberman ever, that then take on the Doctor back in the 60s, back when it was first William Hartnell. You know, it's a giant loop type of thing.
Oh, hell yeah, it is.
And then that wasn't the only reveal, because as you've mentioned and as we've seen in the previews, you know, it turns out that her friend, Mr. Slash there, I don't even
Razor.
Know his name. Razor, thank you. I knew
Razor.
It was something like
that. Yeah.
Mr. Razor was actually John Sims' version of the Master. And he remembers Missy being here, which is kind of weird. Did you pick up on that?
I did. He remembers. He even said, you don't remember me, do you?
Yeah.
Because
That's what it was. She doesn't remember him.
Yeah. You don't remember me, do you? Because, like, he was – she doesn't – his thing is, like – because he knew she was straight away.
Yeah, which is kind of odd because she –
yeah, it is odd. But she doesn't remember being him, being dressed up as Razor, being on the ship. And he's like, you don't remember me. You're me. So
I'm still wondering if we're going to get a reveal that she was never the Master. Because you notice he introduced himself as the Master to her.
Yes.
He said, hi, Missy. I'm the Master.
Yes.
And he did not say, I'm you. He did not say, you know, remember when you were me. The only reference he made to his past was they asked why he was disguised. And he said, well, when you've been somebody's prime minister, you kind of got to go undercover. So
as soon as he said that, she went,
yeah. You know. But that almost says, too, that he knew Bill was coming here. Because she would have been the only one other than the Doctor that would have recognized him as Harold Saxon, the prime minister.
Yes, that's true.
So I found that a little bit suspicious. But then once he reacquainted himself with Missy, as it were. She suddenly seemed to drop the charade of being good and was like, yep, we're going to be bad together.
Yeah, I noticed that as well. Now they come in together with the cyber, you know, and they're going to be bad. But then in the previews for next week, they're all working together against the Cybermen.
Yeah, which was odd. And I love the fact that Missy seems to have something to do with her umbrella. She pointed it at that guy
her
earlier.
Umbrella is her
Sonic
screwdriver. Yeah, she has umbrella.
Is it going to be Sonic? Because John Sims always used the laser screwdriver, and he always said, you know, Sonic's ridiculous. It doesn't do any damage. Laser is where it's at. So are we going to find out that her umbrella is Sonic or laser? Because Sims definitely looked like he was using the same laser that he had when David Tennant was around.
Okay, yeah, that's true. That's true.
And the other thing, too, is the last time we saw John Sim as the Master was the End of Time. And he fell into the crack with Rassilon. Shot him, fell into the crack in time with Rassilon so that it could be sealed up and Gallifrey could be, quote-unquote, lost again, right before David Tennant had to disappear.
Right.
So that's the last we saw of him. But he seems to recall his time as the Harold Saxon. Now, Harold Saxon was killed. His body was burned on a pyre by the doctor to make sure that he was dead. Then, in the End of Time Part 1, he was resurrected through that weird ritual that those cultists did and brought him back from the dead. And that's why he was never quite right. You know, he had that weird electrical thing going on where he kept, like, spazzing out and turning into electricity. So, so there was no time between him being Harold Saxon and then the End of Time that you could say, oh, well, maybe in there he was having adventures. So something happened when he fell through the crack with Rassilon and the rest of the Time Lords. And I think that we're going to have to find out what that is pretty damn quick in the next episode because they get a lot of ground to cover. Did I lose?
And they do have no. I'm processing.
That's actually what I meant.
Not where you mute.
Did I lose you? This is a lot to process.
No. I'm processing everything you're just saying, and I'm like, man, is the final episode going to be a double episode or an extended episode? I wonder.
I don't know. All I know is that they're calling it because it's British. They're calling it the series finale, but it's not. Because they don't have seasons as much as they have series in Britain. So this is the final episode of the series for this series, because this is series 10 of Doctor Who.
You know, one of the things that neither one of us mentioned was the very first thing you see in this episode is he's in some sort of snow tundra, snow planet, or whatever it is. But he stumbles out of the TARDIS and drops to his knees and starts regenerating. His hands are glowing. His face is glowing.
Yep.
So we got to get there, too.
Yes, we do. And
we got to get there.
And we still don't know. They haven't told us if he's going to regenerate in this coming up episode or if he's going to regenerate during the Christmas special.
Right. That's true.
They've said that Peter Capaldi will be in the Christmas special, but they haven't said the extent.
It almost would be a dick move. To make us wait 6 months.
Yes, it would be a Walking Dead move.
Yeah. Good one.
Yeah.
It was a great episode, though.
It was.
I loved not knowing anything, so I got that big reveal where I had – I really wish kind of we were watching it together because, like, I had a very powerful emotional reaction. I was sitting by myself, so I felt kind of foolish. But, I was shocked in a good way. I was shocked in a good way. But now I'm just like, well, Bill's dead. Like, Bill's gone.
Yeah.
I don't think you can un-Cyberman her. I know Nardo said, oh, we just need to go back in time before this happened and prevent it from happening. Well, you can't do that. They've said that 1,000 times. You can't do that. Unless he does, and that's what causes him to have to regenerate because he violates some rule or something. I don't know. Because, you know, we know that Moffat's leaving the show. We know that there's so many people leaving the show. Missy says she's not going to be back. You know, there was rumor if Bill was going to be back or not, if they're going to start all over again with the new doctor, new companion, new everything. I mean, this is the biggest reboot of the series, save the 2005 relaunch.
Right. Yep.
So
it's going to be damn impressive. I'm excited. I still think we're going to find out that Missy is not who she says she is. I think that's going to be a thing, and it's going to be.
Why has she been pretending then?
Because
it's not like only he's the one that knows. You know what I mean? Like
that
planet. They plan it when they put her in that 1,000-year thing. I mean, she's got to be a.
Yep.
She's got to be a Time Lord.
They never named her, though, did they? You notice that? When they were going to kill her? I'm wondering if, and this is kind of weird, but roll with me here, if she isn't aware that she's someone else. If she thinks that she's the Master, but she's not really. Like, she's confused or, you know, somebody messed with her head type of thing.
Oh, okay. Yep. Yep.
I don't know. It's
there's a lot to ponder, and the thing is like we don't know of any other Time Lords. So if she's not the Master, then they're going to reveal her to be someone, and we're just supposed to be like, okay, who is that?
There have been a few other Time Lords back in the early days that people have thought that it could be, and I want to say Rassilon, but it's not. It's what is she? The Rachne or it's something like that. But there was a female evil Time Lord name. I think it was the Rachne or something like that.
Okay, so this would be going back a ways then.
Yes, which they've done before.
Which they've done this season.
Yes.
Twice now.
Did you catch the nice little nod there at the very end, you know, when we're meeting Cyberman Bill and, you know, I am Bill Potts. And then it zooms in and you get to see her human eye in there and the tear comes down and it comes down the outside of the metal because Cybermen always have that one thing around their eye that looks like a tear.
Yes. Yes.
Oh, the show. This friggin' show.
Yeah, it was a great episode.
It really was.
It was a great episode. It's been a good season. And I'm very excited for next week's episode.
Yes.
Very, very excited for next week's episode.
Very excited.
So.
Yeah.
We shall see.
Yep.
Well, that sort of wraps it up for me this week.
Me as well. Yeah.
Cool. So I guess that's it. I guess you can find us on some social media platforms. I am at Superstar Mel on the Twitter machine.
I am at The Quantum Geek. That's G33K.
The show is at What Did You Watch on Twitter and What Did You Watch This Week on Facebook. So check us out there. And, before I say thanks, I made a promise last week that I just remembered. And
that doesn't bode well.
I'm going to follow through on it right now. Someone asked me what Roku channels I use or I have up that I use or I check out other than the standard. So just real quick, I have Netflix, I have WWE Network, I have Hulu. The CW app is pretty cool. You can watch all their CW shows on there. I think they only have maybe like the most recent 5 episodes, so you have to watch them as you go. They have the CW Seed, which is another app version of theirs, which is excellent as well. If you're a fan of the original Constantine series that was unnecessarily canceled and they won't bring it back, that complete series is on the CW Seed, and they have some original things on the CW Seed because they are bringing that back in cartoon form on that app, that channel, if you will. The PBS app. PBS Kids app, I mean, is great. Hasbro Studios has a free app, and you can watch some Transformers and G.I. Joe on there. Now, on the Hasbro and on the CW and the CWC, you do have to deal with commercials, but it is not overly troubling. If you're a Jim Henson fan, there's the Jim Henson Family TV app / channel, which you can watch Fraggle Rock on. As well as some other the non-Muppet-related Jim Henson properties. Again, slight commercials. I think the Hasbro channel also has Jim and the Holograms. There's a channel called Cape Television, which is pretty cool. Cape as in super cape or superhero cape. And you can watch all the old, like, black and white serials like Batman, Superman, Captain America, the Green Hornet and whatnot. Like, you'd go to the movie theater to watch week after week, you know, the ones that really made Kathy Bates' character in Misery super angry, how they changed the beginning of the next week from what happened last week.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, those are on there, and those are pretty cool. Another channel that I watch frequently is Disney Junior for my son. Disney has their own, as well as Disney XD. You get limited access to episodes on those because you have to have cable to sign in with your cable account to get more. And another app that I use frequently, or at least I watch, they're called apps on here, or they're called channels or apps, whatever you want to call it. You have to download it to your Roku player. It's called Rasslin, R-A-S-S-L-I-N. And I don't know how it works. I don't know what they do. I know I hit enter, and it runs a commercial, and then it'll pull up. I think – I don't know if it grabs from YouTube or Dailymotion or some sort of server they have there. But you could be watching old wrestling black and white from the 50s or Memphis wrestling from the 70s or independent wrestling, which I've seen some local independents on there, even out of Rhode Island and New England on here. Or maybe you're going to watch some TNA or old WWE, and the video clips can last from a promo to a match to a whole hour-long TV show, and they throw a couple of commercials on in between. Sometimes I just set that on the background and I work on other stuff, whatever. So those are a few of the apps or channels, if you will, that I use on Roku. Those are all free. There's a lot of paid ones, of course, as well you can get. So there. There's that.
All righty then.
And just all the closing stuff we already spoke about, kick back a couple minutes and listen to it again if you need to know again.
Yeah, that stuff.
What our social media handles are, so...
That's if they didn't hear us start through the send-off and they're like, oh, they're talking about their social media stuff, and they just hit stop.
Oh, that's true. So yeah, they could do that.
It's entirely possible that nobody's listening to this right now.
It very, very well could be. And I guess if that's the case, then that's the case.
Yep.
Less sad.
Oh, well. Life goes on.
It does indeed. It does indeed. People have written songs about that. All right. Well, thanks.
Thanks, everybody. Talk to you next week.